Blog Talk Radio.
Visit our website, 13moonwalkforpeace.com. Be informed so that you can join us on 11-11-11 as we walk into Atlanta from the Freedom Park to the King Center, leaving Freedom Park at 10 o'clock in the morning, arriving at the King Center at 11-11 that morning. So come join us. There'll be events that evening at Morehouse College. Can check out all the information on our website. Again, it's 13moonwalkforpeace.com.
There's a gift, there's a light in your heart. You just can't contain it. When we all play our part around the world, it's just so amazing. This bridge together with our wisdom, and through our hearts, we can make a change for the better.
Welcome to Peace Talk, Now Time Radio. This is your host, Audrey Scott Williams, and I want to say welcome to all of our listeners today. This is a great show. We're going to be talking about, in fact, not just this week, but next week as well. But today we're going to be talking about biodynamic farming and how the use of organics and biodynamic farming are transforming communities. We're going to have our special guest today, Ron Ellis. Next week, we're going to have Reverend Albert Sampson out of Chicago, who has the only church that has a department of agriculture, and he is creating a network of farms and distribution centers around the country to get good quality food into our communities and to the people who need it. So today, my special guest is Ron Ellis, and he is from Spring Meadows Organics. Ron, are you online?
I am here. Can you hear me?
We sure can, Ron. Welcome to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. And I am so interested in, you know, we've had several opportunities to talk about what you all are doing up in the mountains in Alabama. And
right.
It really, really intrigues me. So why don't I let you kind of introduce our audience to Spring Meadow Organics and to the concept of biodynamic farming and what you all are doing to transform the community there.
Well, first of all, thanks so very much for having us on. And it is vitally important that we do something other than what's being done to us in terms of this whole food system and agribusiness and the madness that's involved in it. I will tell you specifically where I am geographically. I think that's important. I am in the Montgomery area. And I live in a suburb right out of Montgomery, about 10-12 miles, called Prattville. The farm that I am consulting on is in Verbena, which is about another 30 minutes further up the road from me, up in the hilly community outside of Montgomery. Again, altogether about 40-45 miles from Montgomery. I'm sitting on my patio right now, and something just dawned on me that the reason the squirrels haven't been in the yard, you know, chasing and trying to get my figs and whatnot, is because I've got 8 young chickens that I now turn out in the yard for part of the day. And yesterday we saw the chickens chasing a squirrel, so that's why the squirrels are not coming into the backyard. Because, you know, we raise these beautiful figs, and the squirrels love them, as do, you know, everybody loves them. But now we've got to the control. And that's what part of this whole thing is about when we talk about biodynamics and whatnot. People working with nature. Nature is a wonderful thing. I mean, there's all sorts of stuff in nature. One of the simplest things for people to relate to, I think, is what we call companion planting. There is an answer. If you've got bug problems, if you've got weed problems, if you've got problems of fertility and whatnot, companion planting is something that we do to solve a lot of the problems. For instance, and this is one of my favorites because it's so successful, if I grow potatoes, white potatoes, not sweet potatoes, white potatoes, and the various permutations of them, and there's so many potatoes that fit into that category, but to keep potato beetles from destroying them, we plant the bush beans among the potatoes. Potato beetles hate bush beans, whatever the aroma or whatever it is, the energy from them or whatever, they can't stand it, so they stay away. And bush beans can't stand potatoes, so it's a win-win situation. And it's these sorts of relationships in nature, and there's no different between that and what I just described about the chickens. There are controls all throughout. We don't need the chemicals. We don't need modern agriculture and all the bad things that it brings into our lives, and it's so much, you know. The the idea of biodynamics is what we call the premium organics, because we are working so closely with nature all the time. People have to understand that even with organics, a farmer is talking about several hundred dollars per acre in inputs, even if they're non-poisonous things that you're spraying onto the plants, that you're digging into the soil, that are costing money. Okay, what we work from is the belief that everything that you need can be had right there where you are on your garden plot. You can handle your own fertility on the plot by growing cover crops. You know, the things that farmers used to do eons ago, clover and triticale and alfalfa in the soil to fertilize the soil and those sorts of things. Pest problems, all of them can be handled with things that you find in nature, especially herbs. They're also, like, for instance, if you've got cabbage worms that are eating up your collards and cabbages and whatnot. Well, there's an herb called wormwood. Make a tea of it, stir it up well, put it in your garden sprayer, and just go to your garden and spray it, and it will knock off these cabbage worms. And the list just goes on and on and on and on and on.
Ron, I have a question I want to ask you, because this is just fascinating. We have to do a show just going through all these things that you're talking about, because I'm just amazed at the knowledge that you're just right off the top of your head giving us. But I also want to just bring the conversation to, you had mentioned to me how you were engaging between the farming and the prison industry and what you were doing. Can you talk a little bit about that as well? And I know I'm switching gears here for just
sure.
A minute.
Oh, no problem, no problem. You're right. There's just so much, and that's going to be one of the things that we're doing with this latest project in Verbena, is that we will begin a teaching institute, because there's just so much that has been lost from our native cultures all over the world, but especially here in the United States, where we've been, you know, brainwashed and you know, propagandized to death, really. But the project that we're working on in Verbena got started actually about a year and a half ago, when I was volunteering at a local prison, going in every Tuesday, and I did this for about 6 months, and teaching the guys organics. So they're sitting up in there and they're bored to death. They have nothing to do, and you know, as they say, you know, the idle mind is the devil's workshop. Okay, well let's start thinking about some other things. So I was going in weekly, and it was, you know, no pun intended, a captive audience, I suppose. So I every week I had as many as 100 guys that were there, and they wouldn't miss one, and they would often tell me, well, you know, you're the highlight of our week, you know, coming in and talking about the things that I was talking about, and trying to relate, again, back to native culture, back to the folk and what the folk, because that therein lies the wisdom of the ages, the wisdom of the universe, is what's in the folk, not what's in the science laboratories or anything else. So several of the guys who became parolees sort of spread out into the community, and they were talking to various people. The United Prison Ministries International is located in Verbena, and they're sitting on about 80 acres of land. And a couple of the guys who had taken my class in prison ended up there, working around that campus, and it's a beautiful place in the rolling hills in Alabama, about 45 miles south of Birmingham and about 45 miles north of Montgomery, sort of right in between there. And they were talking to the people up there who are vegetarians, who feed 15 to 30 people staff and visitors on a daily basis and began to say to themselves, with all this property, it's crazy that we're not raising our food. So the guy said, well, we know the guy. And so they called me, and this was about 3 months ago, 3.5 months ago. We got going with that project. We have put in nearly 200 100-square-foot beds. These are raised biodynamic beds that are dug in a very special way and that kind of a thing. We got that one going. Not long after, we started to get calls from some of the churches in the area, some of the big churches in the area, both black and white, saying, we heard about what you guys are doing. Come and talk to us. Give us some coaching about what we should be doing and what we need to do to sort of bring the community into this and educate people, not just about raising food and gardening, because it's much more than that. I mean, we've got going on, which is at Verbena, is the idea that people have to be educated. Everything is everything. The brothers, this is one of my favorite things to tell folks, is remember back in the 60s when the brothers would meet each other on the street and they'd say, hey, man, what's going on? Hey, man, everything is everything. And that's one of the most profound statements ever made. Everything is connected. Everything in the universe is connected. All the people are connected. And so we have to take the whole person. We have to take the whole package and educate people about the food they're eating, about the lifestyle, about everything, and then ultimately getting back to the beginning, right? When he said, let there be light, every answer to every possible dilemma that you would face was provided to you there. And I'm working, continue to struggle because I have so much to do, but I'm trying to put together a book the working title now is Mama Was a Scientist, subtitled Gardening for Your Life and Soul. And what I'm trying to emphasize with this is that as much as I've studied agriculture, as much as I've talked to agriculturalists, all kinds, again, from the folk standpoint, from the biotech standpoint, all of it, nothing says farming and gardening like Mama. No amount of knowledge that I've ever gained, no people, no scientists that I've ever talked to, have ever been able to relate to me and give to me the kind of knowledge that came from my folk. That is imperative that we understand that we have gotten off on this track with food because it's big business. You know, they say money is the root of all evil. They don't care what they feed you, and if you come up to the trough.
John, I have a question for you. Down this road, you know, I wanted to just wrap up on in terms of the prison movement. You ended up bringing a lot of the prisoners now into the Spring Meadow Organic Initiative that you're doing. So I just wanted to say that to our listening audience. So when we talk about transforming communities, here are opportunities right in our communities to not only increase our well-being, but for populations that have been, you know, left out of the mainstream, here's a way now we can all come in and serve each other. So really what you're talking about is relationships. But you mentioned something, and I got to go here, Ron. Let's talk about Monsanto and what's happening with the whole food system just for a minute now because we only have, a short period of time. But let's see if we can do a little bit of education. I know you have something to say about the GMOs and why people need to be aware of what's happening with the GMO movement and also there are a lot of petitions going around to get the government to make a law that GMO products must be identified in their packaging. So let's talk about that for just a moment.
Okay, first and foremost, we call GMOs, genetically modified organisms, we call it Frankenfood, as in Frankenstein, because this is just some stuff they did. But it's in a long line of things they've been doing really since about the 1950s, or actually late 40s and whatnot. They sort of started down this path. And one of the things I'm sure everybody can relate to when you start talking about Frankenfood is go look at at the wings on some of them chickens, at some of these fried chicken joints, and see how big they are. I mean, those things are as big as my arm, right? And it's when I was a child, it took us 16 weeks to come up with what was called a spring fire. 2 to 3 pound young bird, okay? Now they can turn out a 4 or 5 pound chicken in 4 or 5 weeks. And it has to do with the selective breeding, the chemicals, and the pharmaceuticals that they put into the animals, okay? And they grow fast. They have very, very short lives. If I took one of these hybrid animals and put it out here with my other chickens, it would only live probably about 60 days before it became crippled in the legs, couldn't get to food and water, and it would just simply die. Okay, that's how far we've come in a very, very short period of time. Now we're talking about jettisoning ourselves into the stratosphere in terms of manipulating the genome, manipulating the genetics of animals and plants and things of this nature. They are talking now about putting the gene of an Arctic fish that has what they call the antifreeze gene, and in the coldest sub-zero waters, it continues to swim around while a lot of the other creatures are sort of laying on the bottom and hibernating, and they're taking that gene and they want to put it in fruits and vegetables, so that it will allow farmers to grow deeper into the winter time and into the cold weather, but it also has a preservative effect so that they can take an apple or a tomato or whatever with this gene inserted in it, put it in the produce section, and it can sit there for 3 or 4 months and never have a wrinkle in it and never look like it's rotting, okay, and it's that kind of thing. The other thing that is really important about this, the discussion about genetically modified organisms, is that our government now is bought and sold. Monsanto and these other big companies have bought and sold the people who are in the Food and Drug Administration, the Agriculture Department. If you look at the Agriculture Department or the Food and Drug Administration's approval committee for food and drug substances that we use in this country, right, there are about 42 members on it. And of the 42 members, 36 of those people have either worked directly for Monsanto, some of its associates, or have family, wives, husbands, children who do work for Monsanto. Okay, so right away, the deck is stacked against us. If we go to the Supreme Court, we see that of the justices, 5 of them have either worked for Monsanto, have consulted for them, or have relatives who work for Monsanto. So that when we come to the decision back in 92 from the Supreme Court about seed saving, saying that farmers couldn't save certain seeds because of the patents on them and whatnot, the majority of opinion was written by Clarence Thomas. Clarence Thomas used to be Monsanto's lead attorney. So it's no surprise. The other
Let me stop right there. We're gonna take a break in just a minute. But I wanted to also throw into the conversation, you're giving some good information, that I also wanted to throw into the conversation, and we can pick it up on when we come back from a break, is that one of the things that I found quite interesting in doing some research is that there are many countries now that are banning the GMO seeds and restrictions on them, but the U.S. has no restrictions on it. And when I come back, I want to, maybe pick up with that, and then I want to make sure we're clear about why GMOs are bad for our health, because, we covered a lot of territory here, and again, it's all about complementary relationships
that when we are in balance with nature, we are in balance within ourselves. And so we're going to pick that up when we come back. But we're going to take a break, Ron, and I want to thank you so much for being on Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. We're going to listen to Glorious Times right now, and this is a song by a dear friend of mine. We call him the Purple Crown, or Purple Crown is the name of the group that is doing this song. Makua, I want to thank you for being on the boards today. Makua is our producer for Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. He also has his own show that you can listen to, Sound Synchronicities, on Sunday evenings at 9 p.m. And starting next week, we're also going to begin on Wednesdays at 9 p.m., the show Wisdom Teachings of the Grandmothers, where I'll be bringing the metaphysical teachings of Now Time Prophecies 1 and 2 to our listening audience. So, Makua, let's listen to Glorious Times by Purple Crown. We have a choice to sit and criticize or engage in change. Let's choose to engage and change the world one step at a time here on Peace Talks on Now Time Radio. Welcome back to Peace Talks on Now Time Radio with my guest, Ron Ellis. Ron, let's continue for a few minutes on the GMO issues that were brought up, and then let's transition into what we look for ahead with Spring Meadows Organics, and you can tell us a little more about that project.
Okay. When you start talking about genetically modified organisms, because we have a system that is stacked against us and in favor of the companies that are putting these products out, But government no longer requires them to do testing of any significance. The companies only have to say that it is grass or generally recognized as safe and that they did some preliminary testing and whatnot, and they'll stand behind the safety of this product. The Food and Drug Administration and the Agriculture Department accept that. They don't subject it, as they did in the past, to any significant long-term testing on animals or on human beings. Okay, so we don't know. The government will admit that it's not really sure about what any of this stuff means. But it is grass. It is generally recognized as safe, and we could probably eat as much genetically modified stuff as we want. And over a 20 or 30 year period, it would only adversely affect 100 people out of 1,000. And this is sort of the lax and lazy anti-intellectual way that our own Food and Drug Administration and Agriculture Department approach this subject. But there have been independent scientists who've done very scary studies. For instance, they've known for years now that the consumption of genetically modified potatoes in laboratory tests on rats have led to a huge difference in the weight of the organ, the various organs in their bodies, a depression of the immune system, and various other things. They know this, but these are independent scientists who are doing it versus the industry that puts the product out. The government sides with the industry and gives short shrift to the independent people who are doing it. The number of studies now recently that have been showing that in terms of Roundup Ready, and I'm sure a lot of people have heard that phrase, Roundup Ready corn, Roundup Ready soybeans, Roundup Ready canola, all products made by Monsanto. And Roundup is a herbicide. It is, in fact, a kissing cousin of Agent Orange, okay? And we spray it to kill weeds in the fields. So if we spray too much of it, we'll kill the crop too. So how do we do it? How do we get past that? We take a gene of Agent Orange, of Roundup, and we splice it into the plant itself so that the plant can withstand the spraying of this poisonous herbicide. The weeds will die, but the crop won't. Nonetheless, the crop is absorbing all of this poison. Okay? Now, what they're finding now in some of these recent studies is that in our gut, in the gut of lab animals who have eaten the genetically modified, the Roundup Ready corn and soybeans, is that gene is planting itself in the gut so that the gut is producing its own Roundup, essentially Agent Orange. Okay?
Ron, talk about, I know that, as we're talking about all these things, I want to kind of bring it into a perspective. One of the things that I understand, and I'm not a scientist in this, but in just sort of the general knowledge, is that the increase that we're seeing in our communities of autoimmune deficiency, illnesses, related illnesses, autism among children, Alzheimer's among our elders, those tremendous jumps in percentages in those disease categories, there seems to be a correlation between that and the quality of the food that we're producing, and particularly the impact of GMO products in the market, corn, fructose, and sweeteners, and so forth. So let's make this a full circle back to organic farming and the way that you're doing it. Mm-hmm. One of the ways then that I think, one, the education, as you mentioned earlier, is crucial, that we learn what is happening in our food chain so that we can make informed decisions, mm-hmm. and that's the one, and mm-hmm. understand the relationship of what we're consuming and its impact on our bodies, not just in the short term, but in the long term.
Sure.
Now does that bring us forward to the work that you're doing with Spring Meadow Organics?
Right. Again, it's real simple, and you know, it's an analogy I draw all the time. Is that you know you claim that you're you know because I speak to a lot of churches and whatnot, and so you say you're a Christian and you believe God took a lump of clay and you know and made you and whatnot. And scientifically, we know just about every constituent in the soil can be found in the body, and the body even takes elements out of the soil and totally transmutes them into new substances in order to properly feed the brain and so on and so forth. So the logical conclusion, you know, it should be easy for everybody to figure out. The further away you get from that dirt, the sicker you get and the faster you die. If you take baby pigs and you raise them in the modern way on concrete, in these high-efficiency factories and whatnot, you have to keep shooting them with iron supplements and all sorts of other things so they don't become anemic and die, okay? If you take that same pig and you put him out in the dirt, then everything he needs, all the iron he needs, he gets out of the dirt. All of the antibiotics he needs, he gets out of the dirt because naturally occurring in good soil, in compost in particular, is tetracycline and penicillin, okay? It feeds your body. You don't need, and I say, you know, all the time, half-jokingly, when I'm standing up in front of audiences, is I don't need your stinking chemicals. I don't need your stinking science. I don't need any of that because nature provides all of those things. And when it comes to how you act, the substances that you're taking in, that these quickly grown foods, these pharmaceuticals that they're pumping into the food, the antibiotics, the steroids, and all this other stuff, yes, hugely adversely affects your behavior. Around the turn of the century, the person who founded this whole biodynamic movement in the early 1900s, Rudolf Steiner, said that without a healthy body, you cannot have a healthy mind, and without a healthy mind, you cannot entertain moral thoughts, and without moral thoughts, you cannot pursue spiritual goals. It is what is tied. It is what makes us us. We got our marching orders in the beginning, right? Let there be light. We got it in the beginning, and this is the way that you raise food. And Steiner had said
let's stop for a minute. Let me identify your Peace Talks on Now Time Radio with my guest, Ron Ellis. We're talking about biodynamic farming. If you're interested in being a part of the conversation, you can press 1 on your phone pad and ask some questions and be a part of the conversation. I just wanted to take a moment to invite our listening audience into the conversation. Ron, Which one more time? I know I keep stopping you, but
okay. I mean, there's just so much stuff, and that's why we need a teaching institute. Yeah, go ahead.
Let's talk about for a few minutes now. If you are starting, let's say you're considering, because I know I am. When I get back home off this 13-month walk, one of the things that we're looking at is how to start growing our own food in our backyard. We've looked at a lot of options, raised beds to straw bales and all kinds of farming. What is important for people to know as they begin the process of, actually starting to provide their own food?
Okay. Most important thing is earthworms. Create conditions in which earthworms want to be, okay, because they're the ones that plow the soil. They're the ones that go subsurface, way down, 15, 20 feet in the ground, depending upon the soil, and bring back very important trace elements and minerals that are important to your body. They bring them to the surface, deposit them around the roots of the plants that you're growing in your garden, and the plants suck up all of these life-giving forces and bring them to your body. So there are all these methods that you can do the easiest ones are ones in which you just pile up organic matter on top of the soil and let it rot. I mean, when I say organic matter, leaves, straw, hay, whatever, you can actually just take, again, a straw bale, put it on the ground right on top of the grass, not dig anything, okay, and eventually that straw bale will kill the grass underneath, turn it into a mush. The earthworms will smell this oatmeal, and they will come up from way down and start eating it. And as they do, they start to plow the soil. And then right in top of that straw bale, take a tomato plant, a pepper plant, and put it in there. You're not putting it in the dirt. You're just taking that root ball that you got from the nursery or from one of the big box stores that sells plants and stick it right there in that straw bale. Over time, as the straw breaks down, as the earthworms dig underneath, you're building healthy soil right there in that spot, okay? And there is a method that was used specifically by just piling up straw and hay and planting in it. You know, you're creating those dark, moist conditions for the earthworms to come into. Then just plant in it. That's basically just it. You can become more sophisticated, get yourself off to a faster start by going with a biodynamic raised double dug beds, okay? And you, in terms of where to go, there is a book called How to Raise More Vegetables, and it's by John Jevons, and the last name is J-E-A, V as in Victor, O-N, S as in Sam. Just Google that, put that in your search engine, and come up with that. And that will get you started on the road. There's another real good book called, and this is for older people or people who don't have the energy to dig in the soil, and it's called Lasagna Gardening. It's a Rodale book by Marie Lanza, L-A-N-S-A, right, Marie Lanza, and it's called Lasagna Gardening. And you essentially put cardboard down on the ground, heavy layers of cardboard or newspapers, nice and thick, wet them down real good, put dried leaves and grass clippings and a little bit of composted manure, which you can buy in a bag at any of the big box stores, right, in layers of 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 inches at a time, and you build it just like you build a lasagna in a pan, right? And you build this up. You can border around it if you want. You don't have to. You can just pile it up right there on the ground and immediately plant in it. Just make sure it's wet down real good as you pile on these layers, again, of leaves and straw and grass clippings and composted manure, and build this thing up to about a foot and a half, 2 foot high. Keep it watered down, and then plant in it right away. And you've got a garden. That's just it. And you will see the process that goes on with this and why it's important to do it this way, because, again, the earthworms come in. They bring very important things into to the growing process that you and I can't see with the naked eye, and probably will take forever before we truly understand. But in that direction. And that's it.
The thing I want to mention is, if you're doing this and you want to be, you know, have the healthiest possible seeds, you want to get heirloom seeds. Is that correct?
Hello. Yes, sister. You're talking now. And again, this is your heritage. This is 10,000 or more years of natural plant selection by your ancestors and your grandma and your great aunt Katie and all them that was involved in selecting plants for their climate, for their regions, the taste, the aromas, and all of this. Heirloom seeds are vital because they have thousands of years of genetic material. We are now in a situation where we use all these hybrids. Hybrids, just like the chicken thing I was talking about earlier in the show, anything will take it out because it's weak. It wasn't meant to live long, and the same thing with hybrid plants is that they are meant to have a very short lifespan with lots of chemicals and pharmaceuticals supporting them, the way a lot of us are living in our lives today, by the way, you know, on life support. And when they get sick, if that's all there is around, you know, when the chickens get sick, when the tomatoes and the peppers or whatever we're growing get sick, then there is no disease resistance. And you've taken the plants from thousands of years that had this disease resistance and you've thrown them overboard. You don't have them. And in fact, I already see the cost of these seeds skyrocketing, heirloom seeds going up, because you need to grow what you've got and save the seeds and pass them on for generations to come, because all of the companies producing the hybrids and the genetically modified seeds and plants and animals and whatnot don't care about preserving this. Down in Haiti, when they had the earthquake, Monsanto sent bags of genetically modified soybeans and corn, and the Haitians had a demonstration and piled them up in town center in Port-au-Prince and burned it. Because they said, we know what you've destroyed other countries and other cultures with this, and you ain't going to do it to us.
Well, Ron, I want to thank you for being on Now Time Radio Peace Talks today, and I want to invite you back. I want us to continue this dialogue because, you know, when we were traveling across the country as we walked into communities, especially, well, it didn't really matter if it was urban areas, on reservations, the quality
mm-hmm.
of food that's available to our communities is so sad. I mean, it really
it is.
It should be a crime.
It's poison.
The quality of food that's available, especially to poor people and people of color in urban
Amen.
And reservations and isolated communities around the country. So if we're going to get well, if we're going to be able to be holistic, not just in our bodies, but in our mind and spirits, then we've got to begin to look at what we're consuming and what we're making available. So we're going to have you back
Amen.
On time as we talk about transforming our communities, beginning from the ground up, if you will. So I want to thank you, and I want to segue now into what we can look forward to over the next few weeks. And, Ron, you may be interested in listening in next week. We're going to have Reverend Al Sampson out of Chicago. He's been working very diligently. He has created in his church a Department of Agriculture. It's not something that he has just created. He's been working with this for a number of years now. He was actually ordained by Martin Luther King. So he has foot in the civil rights movement, in community development, and has now really branched out into how to create a distribution network that gets good quality food to the people who need it in our communities at a price that is affordable, because health care should be available to all people, and the greatest health care is from the very beginning what we're putting into our system. So I invite you to call in next week and listen to the conversation, and we're going to open up the lines for questions. So I look forward to having you on again. Thank you so much, Ron Ellis, for being our expert here in biodynamic farming, and we'll be calling on you again.
Keep up the fight, my sister.
All right. Take care now. I wanted to let you know, our listening audience, that the 13 Moon Walk for Peace has arrived in Asheville, North Carolina. This weekend, we're going to, on Saturday at 12 noon at Burton Farms, the community garden, actually Peace Garden, we'll be planting a peace pole and engaging in ceremony with the community there. And then on Sunday, we're going to be doing a water healing ceremony behind the Unity Church there on the French Broad River. As you know, those are two very important aspects of our walk, that we plant peace wherever we go, and we do that symbolically through what we call our towers of power or our peace poles, and that we honor nature, we honor Mother Earth by doing healing ceremonies in our waters that around the country, and in fact around the world, we need to be very much aware not only what we're doing on the earth, but how that's impacting our waters. And so we always seek to send love because we believe that's the most powerful transformative energy into our communities, into Mother Earth, and into our waters. So I want to let you know that if you know anybody in the Asheville area, that you invite them out on Saturday at 12 noon. You can check out www.13moonwalk4peace.com for the location of where we'll be. Come out and join us, and we want to thank the crew there for just opening their land, their hearts to us as we move through. And then we're going to be at Unity Church here in Asheville on Sunday, listening to Reverend Deborah, and then going out with the congregation and members of the community to do our water healing ceremony. We'll be joined this weekend by our family from Ashanti Villa, Sri Charles, and all those that have been so good about the Agni Hotra, using the sacred fire for cleansing the atmosphere. And we're going to talk more about that in the weeks to come. So we have had a very full week. There's a lot going on in communities around the country. I want you to kind of pay attention to a number of things. One, we have a lot of groups across the country that are engaged in the Wall Street, Occupy Wall Street movement. It's taken off like wildfire. Want to encourage you to go to the various sites, maybe even to your own city, and find out what's happening. This weekend on Saturday, tomorrow, is where all the groups together around the world will be standing up for peace, for economic change, and social justice in our communities, beginning at looking at what's happening with the monetary system and how that has created a 1% way that resources are controlled by such a small group, and it's impacting everything. You know, one of the things that we walk for is this whole seven-generation consciousness, and that means that if you're going to make a decision about anything, you think, okay, seven generations, is this going to be good going out seven generations for our community? And if it's not, you go back to the drawing board. Well, right now, if you look at the number of young people in our communities and the lack of jobs that are available, you know, we send our kids to college with the promise that get more education, you're going to get a better job. And now we've got so many of our young people who are not even able to get any kind of job. That's not seven-generation consciousness. So we've got to look at how are we using our resources to build a healthy community. We talk about the food production, but if you follow the monetary trails, how is that lending to or taking away from our quality of life as a community, as a family, as a nation? And of course, that goes on internationally. So I want to encourage you to stay aware of what's happening with the Occupy Wall Street movement. For those of you that have been tracking Elanon this week, October 16th, it's supposed to be closest to the Earth in its orbit. Many believe that that has a number of implications for our environment, number one, and for the consciousness of humanity. So let's be aware and be in a space of really allowing ourselves to be centered over the next few days. And, of course, we're rapidly approaching October 28th. Makua, you want to say anything about October 28th? I know you can listen to Sound Synchronicity on Sunday nights here on Now Time Radio and hear more about 1320, the Mayan calendar. But, Makua, do you want to say anything about October 28th? Just a quick something.
Specifically, I know that October 28th is recognized by certain Mayanists and observers of the Mayan calendar, who did their own calculations that basically arrived at the date of October 28th as being the end of the Mayan calendar. Now, in light of that, I think it's very interesting that we're seeing this upswell of activities happening all across the planet, complementary to this transformative energy. So I think, as you've just shared with people, it's very important that people really be observant, as well as do their very best to be centered within their truth, because there are going to be a lot of things that people will say and things will come and go, and no matter what, whatever may happen to befall the planet or any particular group of people or circumstances, it's most important that we remain centered in the heart as we are observing these things. As I said, October 28th is noted as being the end of the calendar and being a period where there's extreme potential for basically, I guess for lack of a better word, destruction or something to this effect. According to other observations, like those that we speak about on the show, Sound Synchronicity, we're in a period for material destabilization. And that period's been occurring since last October. So the period we're now seeing it arrive at is actually a year from when this period of major material destabilization initiated last year. And so October 28th also, for some accounts, represents an entire year into the process. Now, we've seen the way that that's changed through the global economy, through the way that change has been happening through social justice movements starting in the Middle East earlier this year, and now it's spreading and affecting directly, more and more directly, the economic sectors. So when we talk about devastating occurrences, we also have to bear in mind that the devastation is also going to be marked due to the level of attachment that we've had to the way things have been. So it's going to be a whole different situation, particularly for those who've made their entire livelihood on this idea that time is money. And that idea is now quickly, rapidly dissolving. So what we're looking at now is the restoration, if you will, of the planet, the reclaiming of the planet itself as an intelligent divine body, really shifting into its new place in the galactic community. I know that's a lot of words to just sum up a very brief statement, but the fact is things are changing, irrevocably shifting, and we are going to be really best served by remaining centered in our hearts and really observing ourselves and others through the eyes of love.
Absolutely. And Makur, again, you're going to continue this conversation and go much deeper. You and Bilal on Sunday night at 9 o'clock. And
that's right.
You can look to that on Now Time Radio. I think that that's a tremendous contribution to Now Time Radio, Sound and Sound Synchronicity. And so I want to encourage our listening audience to take advantage of this information. You all did an incredible job last week, so I can't wait for this Sunday evening for the next segment of Sound Synchronicity on Now Time Radio.
Thank you,
Makur.
Thank you very much.
Also, and Makur, if you want to say anything about it, is that, you know, we are in a time of tremendous change, as Makur said, but the ending of anything is always the beginning of something else. And I think that as I look at this whole time capsule that we're in now, and regardless of what area, from what area, what lens you're looking at these times, we're definitely in a time of great change. The opportunity that we have as humanity is the opportunity for evolution. And when I talk about evolution, where we are mindful because we are not afraid to feel and not afraid to move from our heart in forgiveness of ourselves and in love for our families and our outer circles that continue to spiral in much larger ways now with the computer and access to the internet and the web, how our relationships are much bigger. And I think that what I want to say to everyone is just pay attention. Pay attention to what's happening around you. Be informed. Live your truth. And sometimes we may not know the fullness of what that means, but we do know what makes us feel good. And unfortunately, often in our culture, what makes us feel good is often squashed. Sometimes our culture has the effect of kind of killing us with our own love in a certain way by making it very difficult for us to live the path that we know we are here to live. And every now and then, there are a few of us who kind of orbit out and say, let me try this. Let me try to walk the path that I know I'm here to walk. And it's not always an easy path, but it is a path that leads you to feeling so good. And I think that as I look at this opportunity for evolution, and what I'm talking about is that more of us are going to be able to make those kinds of choices and have a much more loving and beneficial impact
for the world that we're going to see evolve. So I'm really excited about the fact that time is shifting and speeding up and sending us right into our hearts, because that's the only place that any of this is going to make sense. We're going to have to trust our intuition and trust our feelings. So I want you to have a great week. We'll be back next Friday on Peace Talks on Now Time Radio, and we look forward to all the program that will be coming forward at the end of Now Time.
Now Time Radio.